Thank you, everybody, and welcome to the Greater IBM Connection and to today's series on, this is sort of a combination of Meet the Experts and Career on Track, but we're having a very special event with you, for you today. And first of all, we want to apologize because we just realized that the posting of the event was not very clear. Many of you had trouble finding the numbers, but we do thank all of those of you who were patient enough to continue to click away in the event site and found it. There's about 125, 130 of you on the call, and we're sure that others will join. So we have a very special call, as I said today. We have two alumni and two very fabulous alumni, and they're here in New York City with me. Your host for this conversation is Jane Scandura. Jane is a social branding and networking communications expert, as well as the producer and director of the documentary Single. And we have always wanted and planned to have an event where you will have an opportunity to see Single, and Jane can tell you about how she got that. So one day we will reverse Jane in this conversation, and she will be the one speaking to you about her experience with that film. The other person in today's call and our guest, our special guest, is Molly Wendell, who, as you know, because you've been hearing her name recently quite often, she is the president of Executives Network, and she is also our featured expert in the Career on Track series, which has been in the Greater IBM Connection, and next month will be in its third installment. So without further ado, thank you again for your patience. Thank you for being inventive and finding the way to join this call. We're going to have an opportunity for you to speak to Jane and Molly at the end of their chat. So hang on, and here's Jane.
Thank you, Floor. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to everyone on the call. Thanks for joining us for today with this teleconference called Moving Forward with Courage, and it is brought to you by the Greater IBM Connection. As Floor said, my name is Jane Scandura. I am a former IBM employee and social networking and personal branding expert, and also a filmmaker. I've been a real enthusiastic supporter of the Greater IBM Connection since leaving IBM about 3 years ago. And now, for the last few months, I've been working with the Greater IBM team on their marketing and event efforts, which is why I'm here today. I'm very excited to be the host for this event. I'll be having a conversation with Molly Wendell, and as Floor said, she's the president of Executives Network, which is a really valuable resource for executives who are currently in transition in today's very challenging job market. She's also the author of the great book that I strongly recommend, titled The New Job Search, Break All the Rules, Get Connected, and Get Hired Faster for the Money You're Worth. She's also a great friend to the Greater IBM Connection and has been a featured expert in the Greater IBM Career on Track webinar series, as Floor mentioned. So, Molly, welcome to the call.
Oh, thanks so much, Jane. I'm thrilled to be here.
Good. There's a good reason why this session with Molly is called Moving Forward with Courage. Over the next half hour or so, I'll be talking to Molly about her experience of being in a job search for exactly, now get this, 2 years and 3 days. She'll talk about the highs, the lows, the aha moments, and the mistakes she made. And whether you're currently in the job market or not, you'll get a lot of value out of Molly's stories. You'll also have the opportunity to ask Molly some questions yourself later on in the call. So, Molly, I do want to start off with the quoting of your first sentence in your book, which is great, and it says, "Getting laid off was the best thing that ever happened to me, really." And I'm sure the majority of people on the call people who have experienced being laid off would not say the same thing. I definitely get it, because you wouldn't be here today if you hadn't lost your job, but maybe you could tell us a little more about why you do feel that way.
Well, I definitely feel that way, but I really didn't feel that way while I was out of work. I was constantly struggling to say, why me? Why am I out of work? Why is it taking so long? But in hindsight, I look back and say, boy, I would never be doing what I'm doing today and helping as many people as I'm helping today had I not lost my job. So what happened was it put me on a new path to life. And it was not just a new path to a career, but a whole new path to life. And so originally I was going to title the book In Search of a Job, In Search of a Life. And but that might not get as many hits on Amazon, so we changed the name. But it was more about wow, you're in a search and your whole life's going to change. Sometimes it's not, hindsight's 20/20, you know, and now it's very clear to me why I needed to be in that job search, why I'm doing what I was supposed to be doing, but it couldn't have happened had I not gotten laid off. So that's really why it was the best thing that could have ever happened to me. And every day I thank God, you know, thanks for getting me laid off, you know, this is great.
That's amazing.
And it's hard, you don't think of it right then, but you think of it beyond that.
Absolutely. I can totally relate to that. And, you know, you say it makes a lot of changes. There's a lot of changes that change your life. But, you know, people, when they lose their job, they seem to probably go through the same stages, like the grief process, right, you know, when you lose a loved one. So after the initial shock wears off, there's usually, like, anger. And then there's that unavoidable pity party that you have for yourself, right? So I'm sure you probably, you know, went through that. But you're such an upbeat and positive person. How did you get through it? How long did it last? And, you know, how did you snap out of it, like Cher said in Moonstruck?
Well, the reality is I did have some pity parties, but I tried not to invite anyone else to the party. The thing is, being out of work and being out of work for that extended period of time is really difficult. And there were, you know, as each month went by, I kept thinking, well, I can't be out of work for more than 2 months. I can't afford that. Well, more than 3 months. Okay, more than 6 months. Okay, certainly by the seventh month, I have to find a job by process of elimination. I mean, isn't everyone else hired? So I must be the last one left. Maybe then I'll find the job. But it was difficult, and there were times where I felt sorry for myself. But I realized that didn't help anything. That didn't help advance the ball and move me forward. And also, you can't take that out of your house, because once you do, people start not wanting to be around you. So what I learned very quickly is if I was going to have a pity party that day, I would keep it close to home. I would call my sister. I'm sure she got tired of me crying on the phone to her. Well, there's got to be a job out there for me somewhere. And she was a great support. And your family, your close, close family can be a great support. But try not to bring your pity party out of the home, because there might be an opportunity for a friend or an acquaintance or some networking contact that you meet that could refer you. But if you bring your pity party outside, they won't refer you because they're afraid of what you're going to do later. There's a guy, I had an executives network happy hour, and this guy showed up, Jerry, and he said, his shoulders were all slumped, and he said, I go, hey, Jerry, it's great to hear you, great to see you. And he said, well, you know, I'm out of work. And I'm like, but that's great, because now you can do what you really want to do. Well, you know how it is. And you reminded me Glum from Gulliver's Travels. And yeah. I'm thinking, Jerry, with an attitude like that, you're never going to find a job. So quit trying to be, you know, all things downer, and start being exciting and positive and motivating, and pick yourself up, because if you can't pick yourself up, nobody else can. So it's got to start with you, and that's what I constantly reminded myself. And the other thing that kept me going is I just knew there was going to be something right around the corner. I just didn't know which corner it was going to be.
Exactly. You know, on top of that, you know, you tell people in your book and in your sessions with executives, don't tell people you're out of work. Aside from the pity party, don't even tell people you're out of work. Tell a little about that.
Here's what happens when people find out that you're out of work. First of all, when you go to a networking function and they say, Molly, what do you do? And initially I said, well, I'm actually in the job search. And I noticed that completely, their whole demeanor changes. And all of a sudden I'm like, I have the plague. I have H1N1, you know. And they did not want to be around me. And I'm thinking, boy, I'm being rejected all day long, and then I go out and I get rejected, and woe is me, but how can I turn this around, and how can I quit getting rejected, and how can I open up the doors instead of closing these doors? And the reality is, when you tell someone you're out of work, they feel sorry for you. It makes them uncomfortable. They're afraid it's contagious. And so I just quit telling people I was out of work and started having interesting conversations and meeting people, and that's the day my job search, you know, one of the days my job search really began, is when I just quit exposing it, because the reality is it's nobody's business.
Right.
You know, whether you're in work or out of work, nobody needs to know. It's about engaging in interesting conversation. So
that's true. That's true. Yeah. And part of that, though, is, too, you know, when you have a conversation with somebody, the first question people ask is, you know, what do? You know, when you can no longer say, oh, I work for IBM, or I'm a VP of marketing. And so another thing people lose is that sense of identity, right? And
right.
And there's a great story in your book, and you have to share it, about when you worked as a bartender.
Right. Again, no experience as a bartender. And I thought, here I am kind of in the middle of my career, what should be, you know, things just moving greatly, and I'm out of work, and what am I going to do? And it was about a year into my job search where I thought, I have to do something. And it's not like I went and seeked out getting a job as a bartender as a lifelong dream, you know. It was more of a short life nightmare. But I was sitting, I was with a friend, and we went to we thought, let's go down to where the baseball team was playing, and let's have a drink at this bar. And we're sitting at the bar, and the baseball game started, and we're still sitting at the bar. We thought it would be televised, but apparently it wasn't. And she was friends with the bar manager. And I kind of looked around the room, and I saw a lot of corporate types at this bar who went off to the game. And I said to the bar manager, I said, look, you need to hire me. And he goes, why would I hire you? I go, trust me, you need to hire me. Huh. He goes, you have no experience. I go, how do you know? And all I could think was, pouring beer? How much experience could you possibly need?
Right.
I've poured a beer before.
Right.
Okay, I have experience. So he kind of took me on as a case study in no experience. And I did
really?
Great. And it became a point where when customers would come in, it used to be the bartenders would get mad at me, the other bartenders, because I talked too much to the customers instead of serving the drink.
Isn't that part of the job?
Well, yeah, and less than except when you're busy. But once they started realizing that I could get more tip money out of a customer if it was a corporate type, because I knew how to have the conversation, then they started saying, Molly, take this one. Molly, take this one's yours, Molly. And they started giving me what they perceived as the corporate types where I could pull in more tips because we shared the tips. But anyway, but I never seeked out being a bartender. And the tough part was my first day on the job, I was kind of in training, and a group of people said, hey, we've got tickets to the pool at Arizona Diamondbacks game. Do you want to go? And my boss was standing right there, and he said, she'd love to go. And I looked at him, and I thought, this is what the job entails, hanging out with the customers? And, you know, and normally at IBM, you'd want to hang out with your
exactly.
customers. But I'm not sure I want to hang out with these people,
right.
but they seem nice. And so I said, sure, I'll go. So I go to the game just after it started. I start walking down the stairs to the pool area, and all of a sudden I hear the words, here comes the bartender. And that's when it hit me. Oh, my God, this is my new identity. I'm a bartender.
Wow.
You know, forget what I used to do. Forget that I was a VP of marketing. Forget that I worked for IBM. Forget all of that. I am a bartender. And I embraced it and said, great. But you know what? That's not just who I am. And that's what it taught me is no longer is my job my identity. I'm my identity. And it's really tough to figure out how to be comfortable with that. But once you do, you can do anything.
That's pretty great. That's absolutely true. You know, and back to that, how did you wrap your head around even just saying, I'm going to go and be a bartender from being a VP of marketing? And what was the process in your head?
It's complete desperation.
That works usually.
You know, the other thing is I just realized that I had to start doing something. I had to change up something. I had to get out of the house. The corporate jobs were not coming forward, and so I had to distract myself and think about doing something that would bring in money to pay the mortgage. I mean, if it brought in enough money to pay half my mortgage, and I'd go off to the bank, this was just so horrible. I would have, you know, you get a lot of tips in $1 bills, right, when you're a bartender. And I would bring bags of cash to the bank my bill, you know, a couple thousand dollars in ones. And every time the bank would see me every month, the people in the bank, they'd look and say, to try and say, who gets her? Because they know that along with me and my little bags are thousands of dollars in $1 bills, and they have to do a lot of counting. It's a lot of work.
Absolutely.
And so you do what you have to do. I took on a lot of odd jobs at that time. Anything I could get that paid money legally, I would take. And it, you know, you swallow your pride, you suck it up, you just do it because you never know who you're going to meet.
Right.
By being a part of that new entity. You never know. I actually found a couple other people some jobs because I met a lot of people bartending because it's a great way to meet people.
Right. Yeah. Right? And if you don't do that and you just keep sitting around looking for the perfect job or waiting for that perfect job to come, you start to become irrelevant, right? Nobody sees you anymore. You kind of regress from society, right? So
right.
You got to keep yourself out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Switching gears a little bit. Your book explains really well that the traditional job search that was so effective in the past, like focusing on your resume and combing through the job boards and calling recruiters, is actually quite the opposite of what we should be doing in today's job market. So how long did you go that traditional route before you knew you had to drastically change your approach, and what initial changes did you make?
Well, the real answer is way too long. The good news for everyone on this call is I already made all the mistakes, so you don't have to now.
That's great.
Because I went through it all, did everything wrong, and then changed it all, did everything right, and that's when the offer started coming in. But I'd say over a solid year, I did everything wrong. I spent the first 6 months really focusing on my resume and making sure every I was dotted and T was crossed, and then someone would make a comment and I'd change it up again, and then someone else would make a comment, I'd change it up again, and I applied online to everything, and I spent almost a solid year sitting in front of the computer, and it was sad, it was lonely, it was depressing, it was really hard. And then two things happened that really changed it up for me. The first thing is I was on an airplane and I sat next to a lawyer who we happened to start talking about a political campaign. And he said, I said, boy, I've always wanted to work on a political campaign. I remember when I was at IBM, there was a woman, I did marketing campaign strategy at one point, and there was a woman who came onto the team and her background was political campaigns. Hmm. I thought, oh, that's so cool. Hmm. And so in the back of my mind, there was always this inkling of working on a political campaign. He said, wow, well, I know the chief of staff of someone who's running for U.S. Congress. Maybe you'd like to talk to him. And
wow.
I say, boy, I would love to.
Right.
And I met with the guy the next day and actually volunteered for the campaign, and they eventually hired me part-time. So that, again, brought in a little bit of extra money, too, when I wasn't bartending,
yep.
To pay the mortgage. But I learned from that I never, ever want to work on a political campaign ever again. I was really glad I never quit a job to work on a political campaign because it's not my world. But the other event that happened, which was really telling for me, was that I met a woman at a networking event, and I started to get out, about a year into my search, I started to get out and meet people and go to events. And I met a woman who had a VP of marketing job, and I said, wow, that's outstanding. And it was for a technology company, and that was my complete background. And she said, I said, boy, you must have a lot of experience in marketing. And she goes, oh, I come from the PR side. And I'm like, oh, okay. I used to have PR people working for me, but whatever. And I said, well, you must have a lot of experience in the technology business, And she said, well, actually, not really. I worked for an agency, and we did, all industries. And I'm like, really? I have, over 15, 18 years of experience with technology. And then I said, well, boy, that's interesting. Well, how did you end up landing this position? And she said, oh, well, I knew the CEO.
Right.
And that's when it hit me. First of all, you stole my job.
Right.
That's what I was thinking. And it's secondly, it's who you know, not what you know. And so I quit focusing on what I knew, which is what I spent the first year doing. And I then focused on who I knew and what I needed to do to meet more people, so that I could get connected, I could steal someone else's job.
Right,
and
that's the lesson to learn is meeting people, staying out there and not retreating.
Right.
Because your obvious inclination and put into the situation is to sit in front of that computer, like you said, right?
Right.
And that's the worst thing that you can do.
It's real easy to do that. But what the other thing that happened, as soon as I started getting out and meeting people and networking and having the right conversations, it started to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
My job search became less of a chore. And I started to get excited about, wow, there's so much opportunity out there. I can't even believe it.
Exactly.
Who knows somebody else
that leads
exactly.
you to another person. It becomes a little bit of a game.
Yeah, and you build your network from your, everyone in your house, which you already know those people, to thousands of people, actually. And
exactly.
you become a known quantity. So
Exactly. And basic skills, just the skills for a functional job, whether it be marketing or or accounting are the basic requirement to get a job, right? I mean,
right.
just like your bank sends you a statement, you expect it to be correct when you get it, right?
So that, I hope it is. I never check it.
No,
so,
right?
Yeah.
But that's the minimum requirement. So today's day and age, I mean, that's not the only thing you need. I mean, you really need to show how you're different, right?
Right.
Because just the skills are not enough. So you know, what makes you different?
What made me different
yeah,
back then?
What made you different back then?
I'll tell you what made me different. Absolutely nothing. I was the same as everyone else. And in hindsight, I would have done things differently. And this is a lesson where you guys can learn from the mistake that I made and figure out where you're different or figure out how to become different. You know, a VP of marketing, they're a dime a dozen. Great VPs of marketing are not a dime a dozen, but sometimes it's hard to get in the mix when there's so many people out there who they say they are great VPs of marketing. What I thought about a year later after I had finally landed a job, I said, boy, what could I have done differently that would have made me stand out? And at the time, the whole concept of search engine optimization really wasn't big yet, and a lot of people didn't know about it. And I thought, you know what? If I had really studied and got smart on search engine optimization, search engine marketing, and was a VP of marketing with an SEO bent, I would have landed in a heartbeat.
Specialization.
Exactly.
Right.
Getting real smart about something.
What's your line about from your sixth grade teacher?
Oh, to be specific is terrific. To be vague is the plague. You know, being specific about what you do
right.
versus being vague. There, I go to these executive network meetings, and there's I hate to pick on the chief information officers, but you guys are horrible in talking about what makes you different. But there was a woman who said, well, we talk about that a lot in the meetings, and there was a woman who said, well, what makes me different is that I really align IT with the business strategy, and I work with people, process, and technology.
What does that mean?
And,
right?
Well,
yeah.
I looked at her, right. and I said, boy, that makes you look like just about every other CIO I've ever met in my entire life. So you're no different than anyone else. You're never going to stand out unless you truly think about what makes you different. And we talk a lot about that in our meetings because
mm-hmm.
we try and really
pinpoint,
yeah. But you've got to think about how you can be different. You know, there's a lot of things going on sustainable, renewable, alternative energy. And just because you have no background in it doesn't mean that you can't get smart in it.
Mm-hmm.
So take a class or two. Talk to everybody in that industry and get to know all the right words and all the right people. And I guarantee nobody's going to care that you don't have the background. They're going to start being impressed that you know all the right people and are having the right conversation.
Exactly. And, you know, and one part of that whole being specific and really zeroing in is, you know, people say, well, what industries do you want to work in? Oh, technology or in energy. You know, what
right.
does that mean?
Right. right. What does that mean? Yeah. What areas do you want to go
right.
go into? Because technology can mean something different to everyone.
Like
energy,
a nice vacation.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So getting real specific, terrific. About what you want to do and what you're focused on, and then build the skills to get there. And again, it doesn't have to be that you have a 4-year degree. I've met more people who aren't using their education in their job than ever. And so it doesn't really matter. But get really smart. I think about now, if I were in marketing now, I'd really focus on social networking.
Yeah.
I would be the expert at every single aspect of social networking out there, and I'd go to a company and say, boy, you know, I see that you're on here and here, but what are you doing here? You know, you're missing the boat on these. How are you attracting this generation or that generation or these future customers, and how are you building the conversation there? And you know what I'd also do? It wouldn't matter if I was just in marketing. I would do that if I was in finance, legal,
exactly.
operations, you name it, because if you haven't realized by now that social networking
exactly.
is a key component and it's here to stay, you know, you must be living in a cave.
Exactly.
So.
I mean, your customers, if they're not doing it today, your customers are tomorrow
right.
have grown up with it.
Right.
And you better get with it.
Exactly.
Right.
So.
Exactly. But then your aha moment kind of came when you realized that the job you were in at the time, you did land a job.
Finally.
In, right.
Yeah.
In commercial real estate, right?
Right.
But you realized the job wasn't for you because it wasn't playing to your strengths. So how did
right.
you come to that realization, and how could others kind of think about that when they're in their situation?
Well, here's how I came to the realization. I actually, after about a year and a half into, or maybe it was 2 years into the job, I went to see a business coach. And I thought, boy, my activity level's sky high. My results are just kind of so-so. I need to get better at this. So what can I do to get better? And so I went to this coach, and I walked in, and I said, look, I don't want to quit my job. I am thrilled with my, I love my job. I'm the only person that's coming to you that doesn't want to quit their job. And so we started talking about some things. I said, I just need my production level to be higher. My activity level sky high, my production level so-so. In order to double my production, do I need to double my activity? Because if that's the case, I simply can't. I'm exhausted. And he said, so we started going through some process that they, you know, all these coaches go through. And at one point, he said, you know, sometimes your greatest strength is your greatest weakness. And he brought up the concept of control. And he said, for example, I'm a control freak. And I looked at him, and my face must have dropped because he said, what just happened? I go, oh, my God, I am too. And I just realized that in my job, I have zero control over anything. So one of my greatest strengths is controlling things, and I have the ability to control nothing every day of the week, every hour of the day. And talk about some severe job dissatisfaction. So that's when I realized I have to get out of commercial real estate. I have to go do something where I can actually control something. So I left there still trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And about 6 months later, I actually went on an archaeological dig in Israel, in Jerusalem, because, you know, never done that before, mm-hmm. So I might as well.
Wow.
And I was sitting there with this was another aha moment. It was really an epiphany. I was standing there with a pickaxe in my hand, and they sent me over to go work on some brand new dirt. They never had me work on the little fine details because I usually broke everything. So I went over to this dirt, this just blank piece of dirt, and they said, go start digging over there. And I'm like, well, digging for what? And they said, well, just start digging. And I go, okay. So I started taking the pickaxe and breaking the ground up. And I remember this so clearly. I had the pickaxe kind of right over my shoulder coming down onto the ground. And by the way, archaeology digs are basically construction worker camps. So
really?
You think you're practicing archaeology, just you're not.
Glamorous description.
Yeah, it sounds fun, but it's not. I mean, it's okay. I don't mean to.
Yeah,
it's okay. It's for some people, maybe not me. But it hit the ground. The pickaxe hit the ground, and all of a sudden I went, I love networking. That's what I love to do.
Yep.
I'm going to build an entire business around networking. And so right when I got home, I started along the concept of building this business. And it's taken a couple iterations, but it's become what it is today of Executive Network, mm-hmm. and going from meetings in one city to now meetings in 11 cities. And I just merged my company with another company, and we're now in 15 cities throughout the country and in Europe. And
I'll be working with you in New York.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
And so you sit there and say, there's some aha moments, but you need to recognize them. You need to honor when something like that comes up and hits you so hard. You need to say, okay, here's what I'm good at. Let me figure out what to do. And some of you may be thinking, but I don't want to build my own company. I won't want mm-hmm. to do my own thing. I enjoy working for someone else, and that's great. Just make sure it's someone you truly enjoy working for instead of trying to fit yourself, square peg into a round hole by responding to a job posting.
Exactly.
So.
No, absolutely. That's great advice, and it's a great story. I love that story. And you go through it in more detail in the book, which is great, So having been through what you went through, you know, give us a few lessons learned. Top three.
Well, I'd say that the top three are probably, the first one is it's not about you. You know, mm-hmm. job search and networking is not about you. Get over yourself, quit the pity party, and quit being all about you. I realized early on, you
relative,
know.
Relative, right?
Yeah, exactly. Over 1 year early on, that I was having the wrong conversation with people, and that was the big issue. It was all about me. Here's all about me. Here's what I can do for you, blah, blah, blah. And I turned it around to make it all about them. And once I did that, the conversations changed and the opportunities came up, which leads me to the next big lesson is focus on the relationship. Quit networking to people and start networking through people. Realize that you don't have to have a big strategic plan of how someone's going to help you. Just, you know, don't try to get married on the first date.
Exactly.
You know, networking's a lot like dating, really.
Yep.
And so when you meet someone, it's not about getting married, it's about getting a first date. And on that first date, it's not about getting married, it's about getting a second date. And how do you take the relationship one step further? If you're on a first date and you spew all about yourself and me, guess what? You're probably not getting a second date because they already know all about you and there's nothing else left up to the imagination. So leave some things up to the imagination, get the relationship going, and then you can figure out the path it might take, but don't be so focused on, well, this person can't help me,
right,
so I don't need to talk to them. Well, how do you know? You mean to tell me that in the 5 minutes you've been talking to them, you know every single thing about them? And
it's not about them. It's who do they know, too?
Exactly.
Right.
So that's the second thing. The third thing is, the big lesson is, it's your decision, too. You know, too many times people get caught up in the flattery of, oh, I got called by a recruiter, oh, someone called me about this job. And that's their decision, not your decision. You need to make your life your decision and be proactive, not reactive, about the opportunities that you pursue, the companies that you pursue, the networking contacts that you pursue. Be very strategic about that so you can end up where you want to be. Don't wait and 20 years later, you say, wow, how did I get into this? I know how I got into this. Someone called me and offered me a job, and I was so flattered, and I took it.
Right.
And then you're going to look back in 20 years and say, I'm not happy. And so don't get caught up in the flattery. Remember, it's your decision. It's your life. Act like it.
That's great advice, absolutely great advice. I mean, you're such a bubbly and upbeat and positive person. You know, but 2 years, how did you maintain your enthusiasm through this?
Well, I remembered that nobody enjoys being invited to the pity party.
Right.
So you've got to stay positive and motivated, and also, you know, who wants to see that downer face in any function? So I left it at home. The other thing that started to be fun is when I started to see results. And again, I had to change my approach to get the results. And so you guys can all change your approach right away and start getting the results, because you can learn from my mistakes. But I started getting a life, and I started doing things that would take my mind off the job search 24/7. You know, nobody's an interesting person who job searches or works 24/7. If that's all you do all day, you're really kind of boring.
Yep.
And so what I did is I took my mind off. I started having fun. You know, I'd always wanted to learn how to do a half axel ice skating. So I hadn't ice skated in 30 years. And
wow.
I'm like, I'm going to take ice skating lessons. Why not? So I went out there and I learned. And I had so much fun. And I felt like Lexi from Ice Castle when I was ice skating down. It was just so enjoyable. And nobody asked me what I did. Nobody asked me how many resumes I sent. Nobody asked me how many interviews I had. I just got to ice skate. And it freed me up and freed my mind up to really think about what I want to do. And I did a lot of those things. You know, I started going to a Bible class, actually, which was the greatest thing I've ever done in my life. And that's what led me to the archaeology dig, and that's what led me to figuring out that networking was what I've always wanted to do.
Right.
But remember, quit feeling guilty by doing something and going somewhere.
And having fun.
Yeah, and having fun, because you never know
exactly
who you're going to meet.
Exactly.
You know, people say, well, I'm going to put off my vacation. No, go on the vacation, because you never know who you're going to sit next to on the plane or meet at the place that's going to bring you an opportunity. So remember that if all you do is job search 24/7 and work 24/7, you're not an interesting person anymore.
Exactly.
So you've got to get out there to become interesting and meet some interesting people and have fun and embrace it. Say, you know what? I'm in this for a reason. So let me figure out that reason. So
that was brilliant. And that, you know, that's a great way to end this conversation. And I've loved this conversation was great. And it kind of brings me back to my producing the documentary and interviewing people, which I loved. And it's kind of like the same path, because when we used to talk to people in the film, we talked to one person, and whatever they said kind of led to something
else.
And you just never know where it's going to lead you.
I tell you, that concept of the leading and the leading, there's a concept that I talk about in the book called the strength of the weak. And I think it's really important to just bring it out there. But the strength of the weak says that the people who you know the least will help you the most.
Right.
And so you need to think about, quit hanging out with your family and friends, and I know you love them, but they're kind of useless when it comes to your job search. And the people who barely know you are going to help you in ways you cannot believe. So start, but you've got to be positive, and you've got to be the right person. And you've got to, you know, quit doing things wrong.
Exactly.
So, okay.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So, you know, before we open up to questions, we have about 20 minutes left. Before we open to questions, I want to thank Molly and you know, also encourage you all to check out her book. I mean, it really is, you know, revolutionary in terms of the job search. I mean, you really do need to check this out. And we have a special discount code on her book.
Before you say the discount, Jane, I just want to reiterate, it is different, and there's some different ideas in there, but the reality is, what do you have to lose?
Right.
I mean, if you're already out of work, you've got nothing to lose. You'll still be out of work tomorrow if it goes wrong.
Exactly.
But if it goes right, you're going to land.
Exactly.
And so...
And what's that saying? If you keep doing what you always did, you're going to get what you always got.
Exactly.
Right? So if you do something a little different, I mean, you're going to get some different results.
Change it up.
So we'll have that discount code. We're going to send you guys a survey. And in the survey, we'll give you the discount code, as well as we'll have that discount code on the community site. And for those of you in the United States who are specifically looking for a director, VP, or C-level position, I encourage you to check out Molly's website. It's executivesnetwork.com. That's plural, executivesnetwork.com.
And we actually have a meeting in New York City tomorrow morning from 8:30 to 11 over at Penn Plaza. So if anyone, director, VP, or C-level is interested, go onto our site, register for tomorrow's meeting. And
you'll see both of us.
And you'll see both of us.
Exactly. So, operator, we'd like to open it up for questions.
Thank you very much. Now, if you would like your line open to ask a question, please press star then 1. To withdraw that request, you may press star 2. But again, please press star then 1 if you care to have your line open. One moment, please. One moment, please. Our first is from Cynthia Wiley. Your line is open.
Hi, Molly. I also put this on the comments on the website, and your story is amazing, and I want to know what you were telling folks when you did go for interviews and you got that commercial real estate job. What did you say about being out of work all that time?
Well, I never told them. So here's kind of how the meetings went. You know, I'd say, oh, you know, John, I got your name from Buzz. Actually, the first two, I only knew two people in the entire industry. One I worked with on that political campaign that I hated, and the second one I had fought against in a zoning hearing like 3 years previous. And I called the second one, and I said, hey, Buzz, it's Molly Wendell. Remember me? And he goes, how can I forget you? And I go, that's great. I need your help. When can we meet? He says, how about Tuesday? So we set up a time to meet. Through him, I said, boy, I'm really interested in commercial real estate. I need to better understand the industry. Who should I talk to? Give me three names. And we went through, and then tell me everything you know about the business. And he gave me everything that I needed to know about that aspect of the business, as well as three other people to contact. I used his name to contact the other three people. I met with them. I asked them all, give me your insight. And I actually have, Cynthia, I have these questions that I used in the book, and I think on some of the blogs under, if you just Google or, excuse me, do a search on smart questions, it will come up with a lot of different questions that I asked and that you can ask. But I was real strategic. You know, where are you going? What do you do? Who are your competitors? What do they do? Who's good? Who's not? And I didn't have to say anything about me. Nobody knew I was out of work for 2 years. Nobody. It was amazing. It was amazing how much they didn't care one iota of anything of my background and what I did. Although they knew I had worked for IBM, and I tell you what, that really went a long way with people.
Absolutely.
They also knew that I'd worked on a political campaign, and that really sparked some interesting conversations. I'm like, oh, I do not want to have another political conversation. So I'm never saying this again. But I gave them like a 2-second, here's who I am, and a 59-minute and 58-second, let's talk about you. And that translated into offers because I was asking all the right questions, strategic questions, about where their business was going, what makes someone successful. And I did it in a way that was not... that showed that I had knowledge, but I didn't have to tell them I had knowledge. And again, Cynthia, I mentioned that blog, how knowing nothing will get you the job more often than knowing everything. Go take a look at that, because that will tell you, kind of give you some more tips and clues on how to do that, how to hold those conversations.
I'm sorry, what's the blog?
If you go to mollywendell.com.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, sorry about that, yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Next question.
As a reminder, press star then one to open your line, and our next is from Terry Morris. Your line's open.
Yeah. Hi, Molly. Thanks for all the great tips. It's been very interesting. I was just wondering how you answered the question, so what are you doing when someone asks you?
What am I doing? I'm spending my life meeting people all day and all night. You know,
You're on the job search. Sorry. When you were actually out on the job search and someone says, you know, so what are you doing these days, or, you know, something like that. Typically, you know, a lot of times people talk about the job that they're doing.
Right.
Here's
how I'd answer it. I'd say, hey, what do you do? I would never answer. I would turn it around. I would deflect. I would not get to the point of, hey, I'm out of work, because the second you get to that point is the second they start feeling sorry for you. And I know people who say, Molly, you can't deflect questions like that. People will think you're a liar if you don't answer them. And I'm here to tell you that people have no idea you don't answer the question. They don't even realize it. If you deflect it in the right way, you know, and it's really just say, hey, Molly, what do you do? Hey, what do you do? And it's quick, it's easy, and you'll be amazed how much people don't know. I have a friend who said, boy, Molly, that would never fly if you didn't answer a question of mine, if you deflected it like that. I'm like, oh, it sure would. You wouldn't even notice. He goes, no, I'd notice, and it wouldn't work. And so for actually the last 2 years, every time he asked me a question, I do that to him. I never answer it. I deflect it. And he's never noticed. And so you don't worry about it, but make sure you don't answer it. I think I mentioned about that in the book of how to not answer questions that you don't want to, because it's going to take the conversation the wrong way. If you really need to say something, and if I really felt like I needed, Molly, what do you do? I could say, I'm in marketing. What about yourself? Or I'm in networking. What about yourself? Whatever it is you're in, you don't have to say who you're working for. You don't have to go into detail. It's quick, it's short, it's sweet, and just move the conversation back to them. That's what I would do, Terry.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right.
Thank you. Our next is from Lou Neclario. Your line's open.
Thank you. Hi. My question is about age. I'm 63, not ready for retirement, not in a long time, I hope. And I'm starting to run across that I'm too senior for the role, or I'm overqualified. How do you handle those situations?
You know, I would work more, Lou, on not trying to apply for positions that are already out there. If you're getting that feedback, and we'd like to think that there's no age bias or gender bias, but there is, and so we'd be ignorant to not recognize that. But the reality is you bring a lot of incredible skill set and knowledge and wisdom to the table. So I think probably perhaps for your situation, you're going to be more likely to network your way to a job than to respond to a posting that gets you a job. Nobody, when I was meeting with people and connecting with them and asking them smart questions about their business, it never once came back to say, well, Molly, you have no experience in our industry. They never came back to me because we weren't focused on me. We were focused on them. So, Lou, get the conversation off you and onto them, and nobody will ever bring that up again, because your knowledge, the knowledge you bring to the table, assuming you're having the conversation with the right person, it's going to be very blatantly obvious that you're the only right person for this job. And maybe it's a consulting role, and maybe it's an interim role, and maybe it's a brand new position that they didn't know they weren't ready to fill because they hadn't met the right person, and all of a sudden you come up and have the right conversation and you're the right person, the role gets created. That happens more often than you realize. So I would focus more on meeting the right people, figuring out what you want to do, meeting the right people, having the right conversations, and quit responding to anyone who can say you're overqualified for the job, because you'd be like, for what job? What do you mean? We're not even talking about a job. We're just having a conversation.
Right.
So does that help, Lou?
Yeah, that helps. Thank you very much.
Okay, great.
You know, hey, Molly, tell them, you know, what's the percentage of jobs that are actually hired? Was it
oh,
right?
So networking, more than 80% of the jobs are found through job postings. I think it's less than 10%. And the reality is a lot of times people will post a position, they'll get so many resumes, they'll end up meeting someone through networking and hire them because it was easier.
Right.
So don't lose sight of that.
And here, Molly is having a conversation with Jane in the greater IBM offices here at IBM in New York City, because networking is her strength. She walks herself into this office. She asked to meet some of the people in charge of the alumni program.
I got referred in.
That's right. Insisted until she was met, and then evaluated an opportunity and convinced us of it. And
it goes the same for me.
Here's a relationship. So
yeah.
Molly and Jane are both examples of not some sort of other planet kind of, you know, future opportunity of networking. You're part of a community of over 100,000 people. You have one common affinity, a common identity, one that obviously you valued, or you would not be a member of this community. Community is people working for each other in a common goal. Make it work for you. Don't go looking for an extra community when you already have a very valuable one.
You bring up a great point, because anytime I meet an ex-IBMer, I have an immediate...
Instant bond.
Yeah, immediate affinity, and I'm like, great, let's talk, because we're already friends.
Right.
Let's just take it further, and let me get to know your last name. So you focus on that, too. Use the network loop. Okay. Now, do we have another question?
Yes, we have two more presently. Josephine Holmes, your line's open now.
Okay.
Yes. Hi. I wanted to follow up on a question that was asked earlier about deflect, and your response was deflecting, and the question had to do with what do you say or how do you respond to the question about what are you up to or what have you been doing. Now, I heard your response, and I could see that working in a networking situation where you're getting leads, finding information, doing research perhaps about a new field that you want to venture into. But what if you have landed a potential interview, or this is perceived as the interview, and so you can't really so much as deflect at that point? I'm not quite sure if that was the original question, if that's where they were going with that. But I'm curious about the response to that aspect of it. You're going to the next level beyond the networking, and this is actually perceived as an interview.
That's a great question, and here's what I do. I actually treated my interviews exactly like I treated my networking opportunities, and I asked all the questions, and they had all the answers, and then they offered me all the jobs. And it was amazing how it worked. I quit acting like it was an interview, and I just acted like it was a networking conversation. But here's how I started. Instead of deflecting like I would have in a networking conversation, which is the example from before, I say, hey, before we get started, let me ask you a quick question. And then I would never stop asking questions. There's a story, I think it's in the book, where I had an interview with the CEO of a company, and it was actually a phone interview. It's for a VP of marketing role for a technology company, right in my sweet spot. And I said, hey, before we get started, Mike, let me ask you a quick question. And he said, okay. And about an hour later, he said, hey, can I ask you a question now? And I go, actually, I'm out of time. He goes, really? I'm like, no, I'm just messing with you. What do you want to know? And he asked me two questions, no significance whatsoever, and offered me the job. And then I ended up turning it down because I didn't have a good feeling about the company. He didn't answer the questions correctly, like I wanted them to be answered. He answered them perfectly, but it helped me make my decision that I didn't want to be associated with that company. Turns out they declared bankruptcy like 6 months later. I would have been out of work again.
It's a mutual relationship.
Yeah, it's a mutual relationship. And I found that when I would do all the question asking and they do all the answering, I was different. Instead of me showing up and being responsive, I was proactive. I was strategic. And they would wax eloquent on stuff. I'm like, well, where are you going from here? Well, what are your strategies in this area? And I talk in the book a lot about those kind of questions. There's a book called Competing for the Future, which is just, aside from my own book, it's my favorite book in the whole world, and it talks about competition and where companies need to be thinking. And it was written quite a while ago, but I think the questions are still applicable. But I do have some of the things that I used from there in my book.
So I guess you would avoid that on the resume by reformatting your resume and not making it chronological, but making it sort of skills-oriented or function-oriented?
No, it's not about the resume, and nobody cares about your resume. And when you have those conversations, it's not about that. But when people come back and say chronological versus skill, I'd always put chronological, because when you put skill and functional resume, people don't know what to do with it, and they think you're hiding something. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I could care less about the resume. I don't care if anyone ever saw my resume. In fact, most of the offers that came through, there was never a resume associated with it.
And the C-suite doesn't get
involved. Yeah,
they don't. You don't get hired for a CEO by somebody passing on a resume.
Right. But if the question is chronological versus other, do chronological make life easy for people? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Does that make sense get your questions in? And in the book, actually, I have an entire chapter on interviewing and how to answer questions that if they end up controlling the interview, like you didn't do your job of controlling the interview, if they end up controlling it, then you can ways that you can turn it around to answer it the way you want to answer it and break up a better conversation. Okay?
We have time for one more question, real quick one.
My next is from Matt Bovell. Your line's open.
Hi, Molly. How are you?
Hey, Matt.
Do you have any special tips for how to conduct yourself at a job fair or at a networking event where everybody already knows that everybody else is out of work? Are there any special tips for that?
You know what? There's a couple ideas here. One is at a job fair, I wouldn't stand in line with everybody else. I would go early. I would help people out. I'd work the registration. I do what I can to be different. The other thing is I wouldn't bring a resume. I wouldn't give them my card. If there was a company I was targeting, I'd go up to that table and I'd have a conversation. Oh, you know, and I'd have a networking conversation. Well, how long have you been in with this company? Oh, really? And where were you before that? Oh, interesting. And what made you make the switch? And how do you like it so far? And I'd ask them a million questions about what they're doing. Boy, you are fascinating. And I determine whether it was interesting for me or not. And if I engage them enough in a relationship, and then I'd say, hey, I'd love to follow up with you. Do you have a card? I would not leave my resume. I would not leave a card. No, he who holds the card controls the interaction. Mm-hmm. So you hold the cards, you control the interaction. So that's what I do at a job fair. I'm not sure that I'd even go, to be honest with you.
Yeah, right.
But if I
counter to everything you just said. Right?
Yeah, but if there was one company that I was trying to meet and I couldn't meet anyone from it, I'd go just for that one company. But I wouldn't go booth to booth.
No, you want to go to a executive network session.
Yeah. and a job fair. But when everyone else knows you're out of work, here's what you do. You've got to be specific, terrific. You've got to say, here's what I'm looking for, and here's where all of you can help me. And you've got to be real specific about that and get them to help you. But you can't say, I want to work for any company in any industry. I just want to work for the great company that has a great holiday party and treats their employees well. Well, who doesn't, you know? But get specific, terrific. And I think on my blog I talk about and in the book, I talk about how to actually go to job search networking meetings. And every job search should include a fair amount of those meetings, because as people of your own, they want to help you. People who are in the job search realize how hard it is, and they want to help everyone else in the job search. The other thing I do when I go to those is I would help as many people as I possibly could, and that's what I did. And the more people you help, the more people want to help you. Okay, I think that's about it.
I want to make a comment about Matt. And welcome back, Matt. You're faithful. You're going to get a lot of this series, Matt, because you're interested, you're faithful, and you're asking a lot of questions. But I just want to point out something that I hadn't made a connection until Molly said it, and then all of a sudden it glared at me that her company's name is Executives Network. Now, coming from a background like IBM, where the whole executive title is thrown around like it's the thing to achieve for 20 years, I don't think that her network is restricted to people who held executive positions
at IBM,
but I think is more of a complete and a total experience. So don't be afraid to explore some of the offerings and the things that Molly and her group or people like her have out there, because I think, you know, you don't exclude yourself because you either have a technical background
it is for director, VP, or C level. So if those are the types of roles that you're going for, then it's the right fit for you. If those aren't the types of roles, there are plenty of other job search groups out there in every city that would be an appropriate fit for you. You always want to make sure you go to the appropriate one. But it's a great opportunity. And sometimes, you know, you might be I'm not sure what level. I can't even remember the levels at IBM, but But when I left IBM, I took a director role for another company. From there, I took a VP role. Of course, it would have taken me like 20 more years at IBM to get the VP role. So, you know, director and VP means different things at different companies. But it's all about, for Executives Network, it's all about what role you're going for.
Right.
Okay, so that's it. Thank you, Molly. And if you have any more questions, you can direct them to the, there's a forum. Molly has a forum at the community site.
It's, in the community site, greateribm.com. Direct yourselves to the forum, and you'll see one, and I think it's in the fourth category, on careers and collaboration. Her forum is called Ask Molly.
Yes.
So and we really encourage you to continue this conversation with Molly there. She reads these questions. She answers them personally. And it helps you to come and take advantage of each session per topic so that you're not sort of hearing the same thing. We do mean this to be a series. So as a series, it is progressive. Therefore, you know, by now you should be in, like, level two.
All right. Well, thanks so much for
thank
having
you.
Me.
And thank you, Jane and Molly. And one more time, I just want to point out the fact that these ladies are here because they joined a network that they saw opportunity and had the vision and the foresight to put some time of their own. And in either one of these, their cases, they raised their hands to take on things within the community, and we're very grateful to them for that. But I want you to know that neither Jane, well, Jane does know, but because Jane's actually on a project for us. But Molly doesn't receive any kind of remuneration from IBM or from the Greater IBM Connection for the career series that she's done. She's doing this because of you. She's doing it because she's part of a network, and she understands that the strength of the network is her strength. So as it grows, she will be able to develop more and more opportunities from it. So there are many of you out there who have things to contribute to each other and have things that you want to get from one another. And networking is that, is finding out what is it that you have to contribute and what do you want to get, and then what are the means that you have to do that. You have a community. It's building. It's growing. We're 100,000 now. We're going to be a lot bigger than that by the end of the year, and it will continue to grow. To not know why you are here and what you want to get out of it is to miss opportunities, and that's just a crying shame. So thank you very much. I want to let you know that, okay, today is Thursday, the 17th of September. We're pretty much done for this month's event with the Covey attendance yesterday. And by the way, there were over 1,100 of you that attended that. And again, one more time, we're going to a big hand of applause to Molly, who facilitated that opportunity for the Greater IBM Connection, introducing us to Stephen Covey. And there will be more Covey events probably soon, so watch out for those. But we have a full month in October. Molly Wendell is going to be again on the Career on Track series, and we also have a very big special event. It's a Think Forum on the CIO study that IBM has just published for the first time. Very important study on that role and the future of that role. And we're also going to have an event around smarter food. So for those of you that are in the retail or consumer products or the food industry, great event to attend and find out what is going on. Tips and tools, that welcome call for new members or for those of you who are still not fully familiarized with your assets in the community and how you connect and interconnect. Join us on the first Thursday of the month in October, and we will take you through. So thank you to Jane Scandura and to Molly Wendell, and we'll see you in October.
Bye.
Until then. Right away in the forum. Thank you all very much. Any final comments from anyone?
Okay.
Terrific. Thank you, operator, and everybody have a good weekend. Until next month.
Bye-bye.
Bye.